Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, David Onick. Our topic this hour is public power. What's it like to have an alternative to PG&E? The concept may seem foreign to those of us in San Francisco, but almost 4 years ago, Marin County residents and businesses have had the option to obtain electricity through a nonprofit public agency called Marin Clean Energy. Using a mechanism known as community choice aggregation, Marin Clean Energy pools its customers' purchasing power to deliver electricity from renewable sources at competitive rates. The Marin program has expanded to include the city of Richmond, and Napa and Albany are considering joining as well. Sonoma County is also on track to deliver greener electricity to its residents through its own new public agency, Sonoma Clean Power. All of which leads us to ask, what about San Francisco? For more than a decade, environmentalists and advocates in city government have sought to establish an energy alternative for residents, known as Clean Power SF, but efforts have stalled. Tonight, we'll discuss the benefits and challenges associated with local government's pursuit of public power and try to shed light on why San Francisco remains a one-utility town. Joining me in studio to discuss these issues are Steve Weissman, Director of the Energy Program at the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment at Berkeley Law. Previously, Steve was an administrative law judge for the California Public Utilities Commission, a policy and legal advisor to three different commissioners at the PUC, and a PUC staff attorney. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
David Baker, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, where he has covered energy and clean tech since 2004. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me on.
And Tom Butt, a council member from the city of Richmond, a longtime clean energy proponent. Tom is also a member of the board of directors of Marin Clean Energy. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Don Wise, executive officer of Marin Clean Energy, a public agency and renewable electricity provider. Previously, Don was a principal with the County of Marin, where she managed energy and sustainability initiatives and served as the executive director for Sustainable North Bay. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Later in the program, we will invite you, our listeners, to call in and join the conversation. Right now, you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our website, kalw.org. All right, Steve, I'd like to start with you. And can you explain what public power really is, the way it's come down in California? What is community choice aggregation?
Well, simply, community choice aggregation means that local governments can sell power to their citizens, and the power be delivered over the distribution and transmission lines of the regulated utility. So in this case, it would be PG&E here in Northern California. So in effect, with community choice aggregation, there are two utilities, one that's arranging for and providing the electric power, and the other one that's handling the rest of the aspects of the service, delivering it to you, doing customer service, billing you, those things. So the aggregation part of it, means that the local government can take advantage of pooling all of the demand within its jurisdiction to potentially get a better rate and maybe provide a more favorable source of power. And the choice part means that anybody in the community can decide to opt out. They can decide that they don't want to get power from the aggregation and instead stick with the utility.
And Don, Marin Clean Energy is just such a provider. Can you tell us, when did you launch and how did you get started?
Sure. So we launched in May of 2010. So we've been serving customers now for about 3.5 years. And the reason that we launched was there was a really strong interest in our community in lowering greenhouse gas emissions and getting more renewables onto the grid. And because there was only one provider and one choice of where we got our electricity from, the formation of a CCA program seemed like the best way to achieve our goals in a really substantial way. And now that we've been up and running for almost 4 years, we have 125,000 customers. And we've been able to offer a choice to these customers between the PG&E generation, which they can still choose at 19% renewable, or either of our two products. We have a 50% renewable product, which is light green, and a 100% renewable product, which is deep green. And through these two options, we've been able to dramatically reduce greenhouse gas emissions, get more renewables onto the grid, and about 75% of the customers in our jurisdiction have chosen to stick with our program.
Thanks. And you have also expanded to other areas such as Richmond. Tom, you were instrumental in having Richmond join Marin Clean Energy. Can you talk about why the city of Richmond made that decision where it became, I believe, the largest jurisdiction to join Marin Clean Energy?
Thank you. You know, it's an interesting story. The original champion of this was the late Marin County Supervisor Charles McGlashan, and he's really the person who brought this forward. And I heard a presentation from him at the local government commission at a conference several years ago, and I asked him if he would come to Richmond and make a presentation to our council, and he was really busy, and we went back and forth, and it took about a year or more to get him out to Richmond, and he finally made the presentation, which was really great. Unfortunately, he died a week later of a heart attack, I think. And so we took that and ran with it. And, you know, it was one of these things that it was politically contentious, but you never knew quite how deep that contentiousness went until we finally got to the point where we were enrolling people. And it turned out that more people enrolled from Richmond than any other jurisdiction.
Why was it so contentious in Richmond?
Well, I think people brought up the same things they brought up other places. You know, probably the thing you heard most was the opt-out provision. And I don't know whether...
So explain that a little, that people would automatically be enrolled in this new system and they would have to affirmatively opt out to stay with the old system. Is that correct?
Right. And that's the way the state law set it up. So you don't have an option. But mm-hmm. we were criticized because we didn't give people the choice of making that. It was a default situation. If you didn't opt out, then you were part of it. And I don't know whether that really bothered people or whether they just didn't like the people in the city council who were doing it, and that was something they heard from somebody else and used it as a way to oppose it. So the opt-in, opt-out thing was a big deal. And I think the other thing was people felt like that it was probably going to cost more, and that somehow people who didn't have the means to really go out and study it would just end up into it by default, and they'd end up paying more money, and that wasn't fair. And, you know, Richmond has a lot of low-income people and so on. As it turned out, as I said before, Richmond's enrollment was the highest of any jurisdiction, higher than Marin County. And as it's also turned out, the rates have predominantly been less expensive than PG&E rates.
Well, and that's a topic we'll come back to here as we discuss the cost differentials here. But I want to go next to David Baker. David, given everything that is happening in the Bay Area, where is San Francisco in its long battle to try to form its own public power situation?
It's stuck in a rut, basically, sort of sitting on the side of the road, not getting anywhere. And it's been that way for a little while now. The city has pursued this to one degree or another for about 10 years, as you mentioned earlier, and it ties into some of the things that are near and dear to pretty much all San Francisco city officials' hearts. You know, the city has very ambitious goals for cutting its greenhouse gas emissions, and a lot of people see this as a way to get there. And you also have people who essentially have sort of a long-running grudge match against PG&E and see this as a way of loosening the company's grip on the city where it's based. The problem has been, first off, if you talk to the people who've been pushing this proposal within the city, they say the single biggest problem is lack of political will in the mayor's office, and they attribute that to backstage lobbying from PG&E, even though the company officially does not oppose the clean power program in San Francisco. But there's also been this recurring problem over the years where the people who are supporting the program keep trying to add conditions onto it that together make it very difficult to get off the ground. They want to have good rates. They want to compete against PG&E. At the same time, they want the city to build its own renewable power facilities. They want those facilities to be built by basically local people, local jobs. They also want to limit the use of these things called renewable energy credits, which the other programs that are launching around the state have used as a way to sort of get off the ground. And so as a result, the people at the staff level at the city keep trying to balance all these things, and it's very difficult to do that and come up with a compelling program.
Don, how did Marin balance those various issues as you were getting started?
Well, we've found that all along it's been really important to walk before we run. So we started by serving a small subset of the customer base, about 8,000 customers, and then incrementally expanding through phases. And we've done the same thing through our purchases of renewable energy. So at the very beginning, our goal was to have a 25% renewable product that was the default product for all customers. PG&E's at that time was only 13% renewable. And we found that within about a year and a half, we were able to increase that from a 25% renewable product while keeping rates competitive up to a 50% renewable product. And our goal ultimately is to get to 100% renewable product and to also incorporate some local solar and other local renewable build-out. But we knew we couldn't start there. We had to get up and running while keeping our rates competitive in the early years. And we've been able to accomplish our goals really ahead of schedule. We've been able to bring online more renewables than we anticipated just in our less than 4 years of operation. And we continue each year to enter into new contracts for power supply. Right now we have 22 different power supply contracts in our portfolio for a whole range of different renewable energy types, including geothermal, solar, wind, et cetera. And we have more local projects being built as we're able to fit them in while keeping our costs competitive. We have a local feed-in tariff project in San Rafael that was built at a private airport. We have a carport shade structure that is in the works for Novato, being built as a carport shade structure for employees at a large nonprofit organization. And we're looking at a solar installation at the Richmond Port that will be able to serve our customers with some of our deep green revenue. And so these are things we couldn't have done at the very beginning, but after getting up and running, developing a revenue stream and a relationship with customers, we're able to incrementally add more local renewables to the mix. And over time, our goal is to move beyond the 50% renewable default product towards only having one product that's 100% renewable and competitive with the incumbent utility.
Tom talked about what the rates were like in Richmond. Can you tell us right now, how do your rates for each of your plans compare to PG&E's rates?
Yeah, all of the customer rates that we're offering right now are less or lower than what PG&E is offering. And that is for a 50% renewable product compared to PG&E's 19% renewable product. Rates do change, so we don't have any sort of guarantee because we can't control what PG&E's rates are going to be from one point in time to another. But we do know for certain that our rates are currently all lower. We have a rate change coming up in April. We only set our rates once per year. We have a rate adjustment process that we go through with a 60-day public review period, so it's very open to the public. By contrast, PG&E has rate changes that can come up a couple times a year. In fact, they have a rate increase planned for May 1st, and then another rate change is planned for July. So there are changes that we're going to be seeing in the rates. But both of the planned PG&E changes, from what we've seen at the Public Utilities Commission, are both going to be increases. So we anticipate that the rate savings that our customers are seeing today will continue at least through the next year, and possibly even the gap may continue to widen, which would allow us to get even more renewables into our mix next year. But I think it's safe to say that all customers are saving money now. This is especially good news for our customers that are living on a tight budget, and for our schools and our local government facilities. We've seen schools and municipal customers switch back to Marin Clean Energy over the last year because they've found that they're able to save several thousand dollars by doing that.
And what about your expansion? Does that really help keep the rates down for everybody as you bring more customers in from surrounding communities?
Yeah, incremental expansion is a factor that allows us to maintain both stable rates and rates that are more competitive. It's not the only factor, though. I think there are other things that come into play. Our procurement methods are intended to keep costs down. We do incorporate the purchase of renewable energy credits as part of our strategy to keep costs down for a proportion of our load, not for all of it, but for a percentage of it. And that's a way to make sure that our customers are not losing money by being our customers. And we also have we've also launched some energy efficiency programs that allow customers to save even more by going through that process of making deep retrofits to their homes and businesses.
David, Dawn talked about the trade-offs that Marin County made as it started Marin Clean Energy. So not building facilities locally as much at first, which Marin Clean Energy had some criticism of. What Dawn is basically saying is that she feels that was necessary at the beginning to get the program running. With San Francisco in the situation it's in now, is there any sense of what trade-offs, what the highest priorities might be between, if it's necessary to choose, between lower rates, between having local facilities staffed by local workers, and a higher percentage of renewable energy? How do those different priorities compare to each other?
In a way, it's really tough to say at this point because that discussion isn't really happening, at least not in public, not in public view. The city came very close to launching its system over a year ago, and the staffers who had been working on it came up with what they thought was a pretty good proposal. It had rates that were higher than PG&E's, significantly higher, more than 40% at the time, but it struck a balance among all these competing interests. And the Public Utilities Commission at the city essentially refused to adopt the rates, and that lack of a formal action put the whole thing basically into deep freeze. And so that kind of discussion, if the people who want this program are still pushing to get it going one way or the other, that's exactly the kind of thing that they're going to have to talk about. But because it's not moving forward at the moment, that's not a discussion that's really actively playing out, at least not in public sight. And it's exactly what will need to be figured out in order to get this thing off the ground.
And when it was almost approved, really they were looking to have all of this, and it almost made it through, correct?
It almost did. Mayor Lee, however, was not in favor of the proposal at that time, and he complained about the price. And he also complained about the opt-out thing that Tom was talking about earlier, saying that would be a big issue in a city with as big an immigrant population as San Francisco. And, you know, if you talk to some of the people on his energy team, the mayor's energy team, they will say, look, how exactly is this going to work? Are you going to go around knocking on door to door in Chinatown saying, okay, you are going to become part of this other energy service provider unless you sign these forms over here? To people who support the program, that's just one of many excuses that the mayor's come up with. But he keeps coming back to that saying, look, this is not the same as launching that kind of program in Marin. This is San Francisco. It's going to have all kinds of little difficulties that are basically just part of who we are as a city.
That opt-in, opt-out issue seems to be a big one in many different places. I'm wondering, going back to you, Dawn, how big an issue was that as you were launching in Marin?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of angst about it. And I think, you know, to start with, it's worth pointing out that customers never chose PG&E to be the monopoly provider in our jurisdiction. So it was interesting to me that there was such a negative reaction to having a program come into place that just simply switched who the default provider was going to be, but offered a choice where there hadn't been a choice before. The opt-out process is long and involves a lot of interaction with the customer. It goes on for 6 months, and customers can actually opt out even after that six-month statutory opt-out period. But what happens during that period is a lot of interface with customers. We send mailers directly to customers' addresses that are their billing addresses. We also do a lot of community outreach, and we do more than is required by law because we want customers to be making an informed choice. But when we were expanding into Richmond, for example, we had over 100 community meetings in Richmond in multiple languages, in multiple venues, in houses of worship and chambers of commerce and places of business and homeowners associations. Homes, restaurants, you name it, community fairs. We tried to find any and every venue to really reach out to the public and make sure that folks were aware of our coming into the community and making sure that they made an informed choice. All of our materials were printed in multiple languages, and the opt-out procedure was handled both online and through call centers that were available 24/7. In multiple languages, really helped customers make an informed choice. So I think that the process works very well and worked well in all of the enrollments that we've gone through. We try to make it really easy for customers so that they're making an informed choice. And as I said, that even after the enrollment period, if a customer maybe wasn't aware of MCE starting to offer service in their community and they find out later after the fact, they can still opt out without being penalized.
Okay, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing public power with my guests, Dawn Wise, Executive Officer of Marin Clean Energy, Steve Weissman, Director of the Energy Program at the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment at Berkeley Law, David Baker, a reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle, and Tom Butt, City of Richmond Council Member. Again, we will shortly give you an opportunity to call in with your questions or comments. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment on klw.org website. Steve, I want to go back to you. First of all, just on this opt-out provision, this is in state law. Does the law give a local jurisdiction any flexibility there if it said, hey, we want to do this, but we just don't want people to automatically be opted in? We want them to have to make an affirmative choice to have to opt in. Is that an option, or does state law take it out of localities' hands?
Well, I think the state law provides an opportunity for running the program opt-out. When the law was first passed back in 1996, it actually was an opt-in law. All you could do was say, we're here now, Marin Energy Authority would like to be your electricity provider. Let us know if you want to join us. And nobody started a program. There wasn't a single one. And so the law was changed, I believe, in 2002. And now it's an opt-out program. And so you started to see progress. You saw an effort in San Joaquin Valley to create a program. You've seen discussions in a number of other communities. Now you've got Marin, and potentially, I think you also have Sonoma County that's beginning to move in that direction. So there's really nothing that would require an opt-out approach, but it's not necessarily considered feasible from a business standpoint to start that way, to start with an opt-in.
Plus, David, when Marin was launching its program, PG&E fought it tooth and nail in all kinds of ways, and it turned into quite a squabble in front of the California Public Utilities Commission, which regulates the state's utilities, and the commission really kind of put its foot down and said, okay, this is the law, this is how we interpret the law, these are the procedures that Marin's going to follow, PG&E, this is what you can and can't do, and they really kind of forged the whole process while Marin was in the midst of it. So Marin was a trailblazer, not just in getting this thing up and running, but in actually sort of they had a trial by fire in terms of how you actually get these things off the ground. And the result of all that fighting back then in 2010 is this set of rules about opt-in, opt-out. The basic law is saying it has to be an opt-out kind of thing, and then that was just sort of cemented in place by the utility regulators in 2010.
Got it, Steve.
Yeah, well, PG&E's been extremely aggressive from the beginning with this whole notion of community choice aggregation. San Joaquin County and the cities within the county tried to form a community choice aggregation a number of years ago. PG&E went on a very heavy campaign and successfully squelched that particular arrangement. PG&E cared about this so much that it sponsored out of its own pocket a statewide initiative that would have required a two-thirds vote by the populace in order to set up a community choice aggregation. That failed. And as David has said, at one point the PUC basically had to tell PG&E to back off. Marin County has been more than a trailblazer. They've been a game changer in this. First of all, they were able to successfully participate in that debate with PG&E and come out ahead. But they also have demonstrated to a number of cities and counties that this is not necessarily going to be a threat to the economic stability of a community, that if you handle this in a prudent way, you can slowly build out and maintain a successful product. And so I think part of the evidence of that has been that Richmond has been willing to sign on, and their conversations now with some other communities as well.
Great. I'd like to turn now. We are fortunate to be joined briefly on the phone by San Francisco Supervisor David Campos, who has been a longtime supporter of Clean Power SF. David, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be on.
Welcome to City Visions, David. Could you just tell us, in your view, why you support Clean Power San Francisco, Clean Power SF, and where it currently stands after all these years?
Well, I think that it's about giving consumers a choice, including giving ratepayers the choice of having 100% clean energy. And I think it's about providing options beyond PG&E. It's not necessarily competition, but having that option, I think, is something that makes the economy locally and everyone else, it makes society better, because it gives that option that is not there right now. Right now, what we're seeing is that the program is on hold. For the supervisors, as you know, approved it with a supermajority, but we're still waiting for rates to be set. And, we're trying to figure out how we move the program forward, and not only the community choice aggregation piece, but to make sure that it's done in conjunction with a very strong local build-out. In other words, that we build an infrastructure so that we're generating our own energy in San Francisco.
And, David, we were talking about that earlier with David Baker from The Chronicle, and the tension between having rates that are competitive, building local facilities with local workers, and having the highest percentage of renewable energy that you can possibly have. We have Marin Clean Energy on the line, who said that they took baby steps and started with some of those and now are moving into others. How do you foresee San Francisco moving forward? Is it feasible in your mind to have it all at once, or given the recent setbacks, are people thinking about perhaps taking baby steps in San Francisco?
Well, I think in San Francisco we're weighing our various options. I do think it is possible to have rate structure that is competitive and at the same time have something that allows us to generate funding for a build-out. I think it's about a balance, and I actually think that the program has tried to strike that right balance. For whatever reason, rates have not been approved locally at the San Francisco PUC. But I actually think that we have everything in place to strike that balance. It's just a question of, are we willing to do it? There is no such thing as a perfect program. There are always aspects of it that are going to be imperfect, that may be problematic for some people. But I think that, as Marin has shown, there is something about moving forward and starting something, because, you know, you can always tweak the program, make it better, expand it as you go forward.
And speaking of Marin, David, an option that has been floated in San Francisco, if other things don't go forward as some hope, would be to simply join Marin Clean Energy the way the city of Richmond has. We're joined here by Tom Butt, the council member from the city of Richmond, who now also sits on the Marin Clean Energy Board. Is that something people in San Francisco are considering as they look at the various options that are out there?
Well, I think that when you're looking at something like this, you have to weigh every option, and so I think every option is on the table. And the thing here is that I think that we can come up something that we can collectively support as a city. I know that there are issues that have been raised by different folks, including, you know, labor partners, and I think that it is possible to come up with something that addresses the concerns that have been laid out. But at this point, at least from my perspective, I think that every option should be on the table, and I'm certainly open to it.
Okay, David, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us this evening. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
We are going to go shortly to more callers from our more calls from our listeners. You're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing public power with my guest, Don Wise, Executive Officer of Marin Clean Energy, Steve Weissman, Director of the Energy Program at the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment at Berkeley Law, David Baker, a reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle, and Tom Butt, council member from the City of Richmond. We were also briefly joined by San Francisco Supervisor David Campos. We now invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you are a Marin Clean Energy customer, what has your experience been? If you are a PG&E customer, would you consider switching based on what you're hearing tonight, or are you happy with your current provider? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our website at kalw.org. Let's go to some calls. We have Michael from Richmond. Welcome to City Visions, Michael.
Oh, hi. Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to ask, basically, people that are there, I've been aware through my professional that that PG&E, for example, is, you know, well, first question is, the question is that would they consider to take over or buy from PG&E some of their cleaner energy systems, such as Northern California's hydro systems, which I know in the past they've been interested in offloading.
So, David.
Well, public utilities in the state at this point don't own as many generating assets as they used to. PG&E does still have the hydro system. It used to have the geysers, geothermal fields, up north of the wine country, but it was forced to get rid of those when the state restructured its electricity market. I think that company would hold on to those hydro dams with everything they got, and they got a lot. It would be very hard for anybody to try to get that. That said, there are a lot of hydro dams around the state that aren't, you know, directly owned by or controlled by PG&E. And in fact, San Francisco, when they almost launched their clean power program, the main provider of the electricity was going to be one of those hydro dams. So it's out there. It's in the marketplace. You don't have to necessarily seize the dam in order to get the power.
Right. Okay. I was just interested because I do know that in the recent past, they have been interested in offloading portions of that system, the hydro system in Northern California, that are difficult to profit from, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Well, hydro provides one of the least cost sources of power for PG&E and its customers. It's a very stable source to the extent to which there's water in the reservoirs, and it's dispatchable, meaning that you can use that hydro, for instance, to help balance out wind or solar that are going to be more intermittent. I don't think there's any likelihood that PG&E is going to want to voluntarily get rid of any of those hydro plants as long as they're proving to be productive.
Thank you for your call, Michael. Now let's go to Pat in San Francisco. Pat, welcome to City Visions. Pat, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Good evening, Pat.
Good evening, and thank you very much for this program. It's really enjoyable and very enlightening.
My question is, following off on from your hydro, could you have your guests talk a little bit of, from their perspective about what the drought is going to be doing to clean energy power, whether we really need it more now that we're in a drought for heaven knows how long, or if it's going to be an obstacle?
Who wants to take that one? Steve?
Well, it depends what you want to classify as being clean power. When Don Weiss talks about renewables that PG&E has, the percentage she's giving reflects everything but the large-scale hydro, which is accurate. The state programs are set up in a way that don't encourage utilities to build more large-scale hydro in order to meet the renewable standards. But in terms of hydro, there are a couple of factors that are reducing the ability to rely on hydro. One is that as years go by, the rivers deliver more and more silt to the reservoirs, and the amount of capacity in the reservoirs keeps going down. And the second, of course, is the drought. It's not just what's in the reservoir. It's what's in the snowpack up in the Sierras and can go into the reservoirs later in the season. So you're going to see a reduction in ability to use hydro, which means there's going to be an increased reliance on natural gas. So I think that formula, from my way of looking at things, says we're moving away from cleaner power, at least during this drought period.
David.
And actually, that was a sort of a brutally ironic development in California last year. I mean, the state is pushing so hard to cut its greenhouse gas emissions, and yet the emissions from the electricity generation sector actually went up last year because the San Onofre nuclear power plant down near San Diego was closed. And we had a drought year last year, too, where we had bad hydroelectric generation, just wasn't as much as we usually have. As a result, our emissions went up. The dams are still going to be very important going forward, even if they produce less. And we're kind of fortunate this time around in that the hydro dams in the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, are looking like they're going to be okay this summer. It looked at for a while like they were going to be kind of running short, too. We import a lot of power from them. We rely on them a lot. This is sort of one of the pillars of our ability to generate clean electricity without a lot of greenhouse gases in the state. And if we end up with more droughts like this in the future because of climate change, that would be a problem.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Pat. Now let's go to Hayes in San Francisco. Hayes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to City Visions.
Thank you very much. I've got a question. It's about the infrastructure, because obviously PG&E, let's say San Francisco did try to do this, PG&E already have all the meters, all the wiring, everything set up. And in a case where in one apartment building one person opts in, one person opts out, how do they figure out how they charge the thing off? And wouldn't PG&E want a piece of the pie since it's their lines and their meter that is showing the amount of money that's the amount of electricity is being used?
Thank you for that question. Don, I'm wondering if you could talk about your experience with that in Marin.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So the way that it works is that PG&E continues to provide the transmission and distribution services to all customers, just as they have before, and they also continue to provide the customer billing and the meter reading. So what happens is that the usage that is broken down per customer is assigned to us to cover the generation needs per customer. So the customers bill based on how much they use, and we buy the amount of power that they need to fit their generation. So the transmission and distribution continues to show up as a charge on the PG&E bill, and the customer continues to pay that directly to PG&E.
And Don, how has that relationship between Marin Clean Energy and PG&E developed over the years, given, as David talked about the history, that it sounds like when you were getting started, there were some pretty fierce battles. Now you're really having to work collaboratively to make this work.
Yeah, that is true. When we were launching, in the year that we launched, PG&E spent over $45 million on the Prop 16 initiative that was intended to prevent CCAs from succeeding across the state. And they also spent $4 million in Marin alone on negative misinformation marketing campaigns. That was unfortunate. Fortunately, there have been some changes there. to management and to their internal practices. And at this point in time, I would say we have a very good working relationship, particularly on the operations front. And we have collaboration among our operations teams on a day-to-day basis to address issues that come up to that really are intended to benefit customers from both sides. And so I think that things are going relatively smoothly now on the operations front. I do think there continue to be issues on the regulatory front where PG&E is pushing for cost shifting that results in our customers having to bear some of the costs of PG&E's generation. And that's unfortunate because while we're looking to have competitive rates, as we talked about, and we're able to achieve that because we don't have shareholder profits and we have a pretty lean, efficient staff, we do have to pay exit fees. Our customers have to pay exit fees to PG&E on a monthly basis for the power that PG&E purchased on their behalf before they departed. And this year alone, those departing charges are over $13 million, which is more than we're spending on our Deep Green energy product premium. So $13 million that our customers are paying to PG&E for a generation product that they're no longer receiving doesn't seem fair. So we're working hard to try and phase that out so that our customers aren't being double charged for generation. And we're hopeful that we can achieve some results there. Fortunately, on the operations side, PG&E is collaborating very well. I think it's these exit fees that we need to collaborate more on in the next few years so that we can better serve customers together.
Thanks, Don. And Hayes, thank you for your call. You are listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing public power with my guests, Don Wise, Executive Officer of Marin Clean Energy, Steve Weissman, Director of the Energy Program at the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment at Berkeley Law, David Baker, a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, and Richmond City Council Member Tom Butt. We'd like to go to an email now from Nathan, who writes in, currently, utilities like PG&E ramp up gas turbines to buffer the intermittency of wind and solar because energy storage is not economic. 100% renewables is a myth without storage. How do CCAs deal with providing electricity during the hours of the day when the wind is not blowing and the sun is not shining, given the economics of storage? Who'd like to take that one? Steve.
Well, I think probably fair for Don at some point explain exactly what they're doing, but I think it is worth just responding, I think, to the general issue of how you deal with intermittency. It is true that natural gas is being relied on very heavily to fill in the gaps when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. In California, the hope is that sun and wind balance each other out a fair amount because the wind tends to blow at night. And so that's great, but that's on a typical day, and most days are not typical. So the result is that you have to be ready for any contingency. Using natural gas is one option, and it's probably from the utility's perspective, the safest, the simplest, the surest way to make sure that everything flows properly. But there are other options as well. The writer mentions energy storage. Well, California has actually, once again, led the nation by creating a requirement that, in fact, a certain amount of the capacity delivered to customers come from stored energy. But this is trying to push the technologies, trying to push the price down through getting some of these things up and running. There are other options. There are ways to try to encourage some customers to cut back, especially the large commercial industrial customers to cut back when the demand is highest or when the sun isn't shining. There are also ways to try to balance out the system with renewables. I mentioned solar. Large-scale hydro, not as a renewable, but as a dispatchable source that can be used to fill in some of those gaps. It can ramp up and down really quickly. But you also have other kinds of renewables, like the geysers and biomass facilities that can be used in that role as well. So it's not necessary to make this purely a matter of relying on natural gas generation to fill in the gaps. In fact, one thing that I think would be very interesting to see in California would be for the Public Utilities Commission to get to a point where it says, utilities, by X date, you have to find a way to do this without relying to the same extent on natural gas as a backup.
And, Don, how does Marin Clean Energy handle this issue?
Yeah, well, I'm so glad this question came up because it really speaks to how we do our purchase of energy, and it's really important to balance the portfolio. So as far as our renewables go, we look for baseload products that are generating 24/7 to complement the solar and wind products that we purchase. So we have three different projects delivering to us right now from landfill waste to energy plants in the Northern California area. Those generate power day and night, whether the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. So those are a great way to help balance out our demand. And then we also, our most recent contract that we signed is with Calpine for geothermal energy from the geysers up in Sonoma County. And that also is a renewable resource that produces day or night, whether the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. So it's a great balancing technology. Those are two that we intend to maintain as a part of our portfolio going into the future. We're also doing three other things, though, to help with this issue of balancing. We're working on the storage front. We actually have a pilot program going with Tesla on stationary battery storage to find ways for our large customers to reduce demand charges and to extend the production of solar into the hours that it's needed, kind of in the late afternoon. The other program that we have growing is a demand response program that achieves some of the goals that Steve was just talking about to adjust usage during the peak hours and shift that usage to the non-peak hours. And then the last area where we're exploring options is through providing more flexible capacity, which is something that's really being called for at the state level through the Public Utilities Commission. And we met with the California Independent System Operator on Friday to talk to them about some of the ideas and initiatives that they have to achieve flexible capacity without just relying on natural gas. And we're interested in working in collaboration with them to pilot some other alternatives to achieve the goals that we need as more renewables get incorporated onto the grid.
Okay, Nathan, we appreciate that email. Let's now go back to the phones. We have Eric from San Francisco. Eric, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, my name is Eric Brooks, and I'm with a coalition called San Francisco Clean Energy Advocates, and I'm the clean energy advocate in San Francisco over the past 10 years that's clocked the most time, pretty much full-time every week for that 10 years to work to make sure and get Clean Power SF, our community choice program, off the ground. And so I first want to just touch on this issue of reliability that you were just talking about. The key to these community choice programs, and especially the one that's being planned for San Francisco, is that they'll build lots of diverse local renewables and efficiency, like solar, small wind, big wind, something called combined heat and power, which is using waste heat from big gas boilers to produce electricity. There's a large capacity for that. And storage, which is now competitive in price, and the other things that Don mentioned. Building all that locally, you create what's called a virtual power plant. So it's the equivalent of having a fossil fuel power plant that's on all the time. But what I wanted to raise in the call is that the Local Agency Formation Commission in San Francisco has taken Clean Power SF out of its holding pattern and put it back in forward motion, and has now done a request for proposals to contractors to finish our local build-out plan to create that local virtual power plant. And really, at this point in San Francisco, there's only one thing preventing us from starting Clean Power SF and getting to 50% clean energy in the city within 10 years, and that is, quite frankly, politics, and it's the mayor's office. The mayor's office is closely tied to PG&E. Willie Brown, who's now a high-paid consultant for PG&E, is one of the people that helps run the mayor's office. And because of that, that is why our Utilities Commission is not launching the program when it's ready to go, when its prices are now competitive with PG&E dirty power rates. The only thing holding us back is politics. So my question is not as much to your panelists as to the public in San Francisco. And my question is, will you do something about this by dialing 311, which is our city number? You can get all our city departments. Ask for the mayor's office and demand of the mayor's office that he stop blocking Clean Power SF.
Okay, thank you for your call. David, you talked about politics earlier, so I would like you to pick up on that point. To what extent can people come together and reach some kind of compromise here? Because it does seem that, you know, there are various sides that seem somewhat stuck at this point. And is there someone or something that can bring people back to the table to compromise, to move forward in something that everyone would be comfortable with here in San Francisco?
I don't know what it would take to get Mayor Lee to change his position on this, because he shows no interest in this whatsoever. You know, he put out a plan in February for ways to tackle climate change. This wasn't anywhere on there. He had all kinds of other things instead, but Clean Power SF was not one of them. And basically, when you talk to his advisors who handle energy and climate issues, they're like, this has been sitting out there 10 years. It's a lost cause. Let's just acknowledge that and move on. So I don't know what could entice him to change his mind on that. And without him changing his mind, you're not going to get the SF PUC to set the rates, which is the formal step that you need to actually launch the thing, because he appoints the people to the SF PUC. And without basically turning that one person, I don't see how this is going to move forward unless they find a workaround, like a way to join Marine Clean Energy without going through the SFPUC. If they find some way to do that on the side, then Mayor Lee's opposition wouldn't matter so much.
Tom, there was a fierce political debate in Richmond as well, though you did come out with something that has now been successful in Richmond. How did you navigate that? Were you on board from the beginning? Were you one of the leading proponents from the beginning? And how did you get other people to come along with your vision?
I was the leading proponent, and I was very fortunate that we had a council majority who wanted to go the same direction. So I don't think there was ever any doubt that the city council would ultimately go that way. I think that the only concern is, you know, would there be sufficient public outcry that it might start peeling people off and that sort of thing. And as it turned out, you know, once we actually got through the enrollment period, I haven't heard a peep from anybody. I haven't heard a single complaint from anybody.
Any of your constituents?
Nobody. You know, we had just a few times during the enrollment period when And you know, the public outreach, as Dawn said, was just so vast. I mean, if anybody said that they didn't understand it, they didn't get the word, you know, the meeting wasn't convenient to them, then they would put on another meeting. They would go to somebody's living room, give them a private presentation if they wanted to. Whatever it took, they would do it. And they did just an outstanding job. And, you know, even after that, I bet I didn't get a half a dozen complaints or inquiries from people who claim they didn't get the letter that gave them the details on opting out. And the people at Marin Clean Energy looked into each one, contacted the people, and it turned out to be things like, well, actually their spouse got the letter, you know, and their spouse didn't share it with them. And this was extremely well run by the staff at Marin Clean Energy. They just did a great job. And again, there just hasn't – I haven't heard a peep out of anybody. I have to believe that people are happy with it, and they're particularly happy with it because they're saving money. They may be saving the world, but, you know, saving money is where the rubber hits the road these days.
Yes, David.
It's going to be an interesting thing when Sonoma gets its program up and running, because they've set their rates. They plan to sign up their first batch of customers in May. And they're doing a two-tier structure where, you know, you can get partial renewable power or all renewable power. The basic product is going to be cheaper than PG&E. The other product is going to be more expensive. And we're going to see how much people are willing to go for this if they have to pay more. You know, if it's a question of simply taking a leap with something that you haven't, you might not be familiar with, but you pay less in the end, that's one thing. If it's a question of, well, taking that leap on something that you haven't seen before and paying more as a result, knowingly paying more, it'll be interesting to see how many people actually go for that. They're being very upfront about it, saying, you know, this is, these are your options here. If you want this one here, you can do it. And I'm very interested to see who goes for it.
Tom.
Well, you know, the situation is similar with Marine Clean Energy. The Deep Green program is slightly more expensive than the Light Green program. That's the 100% renewable. And more people in Richmond have signed up for it than any other jurisdiction. I think I just got a report, almost 400 people in Richmond have signed up for Deep Green. So there's a demand for it out there, and it's only a few dollars a month more. And people that are really, really convinced that they're doing something to save the earth don't mind pitching in.
Yeah, I read some people compare it to buying organic, that people are willing to buy more because they think it's healthier, but they also think it's the right thing to do for the environment and don't mind paying that little bit extra. Mm-hmm. Steve.
You know, over the course of time, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen with prices, but it's entirely feasible that local governments could ultimately provide power at a lower cost. I mean, they've got a couple of built-in advantages. If they start building their own facilities, number one, they probably have some public land that they can use, which makes things less expensive right there. Number two, they don't need to make a profit, so you don't have to build a margin in on top. And third, local governments can borrow money at a lower rate than private companies. They can sell tax-free bonds, and therefore they can get away with lower interest rate. If they play this right over the time as they build out their renewables, the Marin Energy Authority's fleet of renewables could, in fact, wind up being cheaper than PG&E's. It just depends on whether it plays out right.
You know, and it's interesting that it's happened, that it's finally getting some momentum at this point. When CCA, the latest version of the law, was passed in 2002, you didn't, as a utility customer, really have a choice other than the utility. You know, of course, you had to go with whoever was serving your area. Now, at this point in 2014, you actually do. You can go to Solar City or Sunrun or Sungevity or one of those other companies that will lease you solar panels. Many of the arrangements, you don't have to put any money down on your own. And at that point, you're basically reducing PG&E and the other utilities to being more or less the wire company, you know, the ones who transmit electricity and make sure that you're still connected to the grid for the nighttime and whatnot. That's a future that really scares the utilities. And if the cities and counties around California start pursuing the CCA idea more and more, that's chipping away at another chunk of their business right there, and again pushing them to being more of a wire company, which is something that they don't want to do. That's not much of a growth business, and it's not something Wall Street would really like. So this could be, in years to come, this could be a real threat to their business model if it takes off.
Steve, we just have a couple minutes left, and for our callers who weren't able to get on, we apologize. We just had a flood of callers this evening, and we really appreciate all of your interest. With a couple minutes left, Steve, I'm wondering if you can just wrap this up for us, what we see as the future both in San Francisco and in California generally of public power going forward.
Well, it's interesting you put it in terms of public power. It's probably best to remember that the bulk of what you'd call public power right now is really municipal utilities, the whole city of Los Angeles, Sacramento Municipal Utility District. More locally, you've got Palo Alto and Alameda. And I think that you're likely to see more movement toward joining community choice aggregations as the Marin experiment continues to prove out. And so the question, of course, is why? Why do local governments want to do this? And I think that probably the single most important factor is once you get local, just about everybody becomes an environmentalist. So there's a strong interest in getting renewables. And if those values can be reflected in individual communities, then you get a chance to try to get to a higher level.
Thank you so much. That's City Visions for this evening. My guests this evening were Don Wise, Executive Officer of Marin Clean Energy, Steve Weissman from Berkeley Law, David Baker from the San Francisco Chronicle, and Richmond City Council member Tom Budd. Thanks all for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Eric Wayne. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Join my co-host, Joseph Pace, next Monday as we discussed how mindfulness training can help combat stress in at-risk kids. This is David Onick. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.